Dismantled, a podcast inciting curiosity, inspiring truth, and modeling deliberate space-taking on personal, social, and historical issues for people of the sun, the displaced diaspora, lifting love, discourse, solidarity, and liberation.
Welcome back to Dismantle. This is Asia, and I'm here with a special guest today. We're trying something new here on Dismantle for the new year. We haven't done this before, but we wanted to try to take advantage of this place that we live in Oakland. We are lucky to be in a space, in a place where there are lots of people who are on different paths, who have lots of wisdom and experience in their own lives. And we thought it would be a good idea to tap into that, to tap into some of our resources and friends and colleagues and people in the community who can also teach us and also help us dismantle things. So today I'm here with Unique, who's a friend, and we're gonna talk about being Black and Buddhist. But before we get into the topic, we'll do our normal call-in to ground us and center us in this conversation. And I really hope you guys are into these dismantled dialogues. Again, this is new. Let us know how you like it after you listen. You know, give us some feedback, per usual. So let's get into our call-in. You want to go first?
No.
Okay. I didn't think about what I wanted to call in.
Well, I was sitting here, you know, I wasn't sure what I wanted to call in, and I was sitting here listening to your introduction and looking at this glass of water, and I thought, you know, calling in water for me would be really actually be good. It's tied to this new name that I was given in July. Both names have water entities in them, river and ocean. And I was also given the invitation to sit with and contemplate my name in the Sesshin recently for 7 days. And it's an area of big growth. Like, you know, there's a lot in that. And so the idea of calling in the water and all of its different the ways in which we use it and how it operates and depth and surfing and cleansing and all of this wonderful aspects of it, I think I'd like to do today. So
thank you. I appreciate that. I will call in presence. I just noticed that I'm feeling a little, not all over the place, but I don't feel as grounded or centered as I might want to be. But I do really want to be present for this conversation. I want to be mindful, and I just want to be in the moment. I appreciate your calling of water, because that, for whatever reason, just kind of helped me focus a little. So I'm just going to call in presence. So let's move on to our moment of joy, moment of victory. I didn't think about that either.
Yeah, you know, it's like, I'm gonna borrow one, because I have, you know, it was an interesting transition coming, you know, back into the hustle and bustle of regular world after being a sesshin for a week, you know, in such intense silence and stillness, and coming back to a life that's got, you know, some stuff going on and a lot of unresolved issues. And I think it hit me hard. So there was the kind of, I'm free and release. And then it was like, I'm free to address all of this stuff. And I think it was weighing heavily on me. And I went out, had a date night with my partner last night. And on the drive home, he was reminding me, he was just like, you know, did you have a good time? I was like, you know, it was, sorry, whatever. And he was like, well, I remember your face when you bought that snickerdoodle cookie. And if I had a picture of your face when you got that cookie, it was like joy, pure joy and excitement. I was like, wow, I will totally own that. Like, I wasn't aware in the moment that that was happening, but apparently last night at about 8:05 p.m., I experienced
snickerdoodle joy. Okay.
It counts.
It does. Can I make a request? So I, you know, I'm guessing that not all of our listeners are Buddhist or know all of these words and stuff. So if we use Buddhist terms, we're both practitioners of the same practice. So I know some of the terms. I haven't been practicing as long as Unique, but we can explain what they are.
Yes, I'm sorry. Yeah, that makes sense.
Sorry. But okay, snickerdoodles. My moment of joy, I think, is so this morning we had a meeting with our Sangha, which is like our community, our Buddhist community. Just a few of us are on this council, and we're working on a lot of things for our Sangha. And you know, it's Sunday morning, it's the weekend, and we're together like working away. But I actually really enjoyed it, and it feels good to see work and like doing things for other people as a gift or as something that I enjoy. And it also just feels good to like be with people who I like, even if it's doing something that like maybe it's not what I really want to be doing on my Sunday morning. It's good. So I enjoyed this morning. I was glad to be with Unique and Margaret for our Sangha council meeting, even though that's not what, you know, maybe 5 years ago or even 2 years ago, I wouldn't be like, yes, Sunday morning, I'm looking forward to my Sangha council. But that was good. So I'm happy that the day started that way. So now let's just segue into our topic. And again, I want to just say like, this is new. This is our first time doing this, and we're going to just see what happens. We're just going to have a dialogue. Usually on Dismantle, we just talk. So we're going to just talk. So I did want to ask you, Unique, like, how did you come into your practice?
Wow. Many years ago, I guess it's probably been 14 years ago or something like that, I don't know. A mentor of mine actually suggested I look into Buddhism in some way. We would like have these long talks walking Lake Merritt about life and, you know, just this young person trying to just figure it out. And I always had these really deep questions, and I was always someone who's like really in my head a lot. And you know, she suggested, you know, you might want to, some of the concepts and things that I would kind of talk about, she's like, that sounds, you know, the kind of Buddhist philosophy or something that might be something you want to think about or pursuing. And have you ever tried meditating or sitting? And I'm like, no, what? Like, you know? And she's like, well, you know, just really with a light touch. Mm-hmm. And invited me to do like a half day sit at some point, and I went just to try it, and it was a really interesting situation. Like, I was not what I imagined. It was not like what was described in kind of like popular representation of sitting. And with a Zen practice in particular, I was not expecting to go into a room and be told to sit facing a wall. Like, that was a trip. Like, mm-hmm. And with my eyes open, mm-hmm. And with no other instruction aside from that, just sit here and look at the wall and breathe. And I was like, what? And for a half day, I did that. And there you have it. So that's where it started. Mm-hmm. I got whatever that experience was. I don't remember note for note, but whatever that experience was for me was enough to kind of keep me coming back to explore more.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. So something that I heard you mention was like having expectations or just like not knowing what to expect and being kind of surprised at what you were instructed to do. And I think we've talked a little bit before about the experience of doing this practice versus like what you think you're doing or what you expect to do. Like, can you say a little bit about that?
That's like the entire all this practice is for me, like really. Yeah, I feel like that's most up for me, and I will probably bring this up a lot in our conversation. Okay. In terms of my most recent experience. So I mentioned the Sesshin before. The Sesshin is a intensive meditation practice period within the Zen tradition. And so this particular experience for me, I spent 7 days in Rohatsu, a particular type of meditation period. And yeah, it was 7 days of silence and sitting, you know, like upwards of 9 hours or so of sitting meditation in a day. There's walking meditation, and then all of your meals are eaten also formally within the Zendo.
And what's the Zendo?
The Zendo is the place where we practice. So there are about 85 of us in this large room that's a container for our sitting practice, and we're services which include chanting and bowing, and these things are held, and we eat there as well in a particularly like formal way, and I can imagine a lot of things about what that would be like. And I did imagine a lot of things before I went. You know, you get the schedule and you commit before you go. Like, you know, I'm committing to do this. I'm kind of vowing to take this pause in my life and to drop into this practice. And then you look at a schedule that says, you know, you're getting up and going to Zendo at 4:30 in the morning. And everything is sketched out until you go to bed at 9:30 at night. And I was incredibly intimidated by that and had all kinds of contortions and emotions about, like, what was going to happen. And then I just do. I arrive and I just do from moment to moment.
Hmm.
And my experience of doing in each moment is different from, like, almost from one breath to the next breath.
Mm-hmm.
And it's much as I can drop out of my ideas about what the next breath is going to be like and whether I can barely stand to, like, you know, I feel like my leg is going to fall off if I don't move well. I don't move and my leg doesn't fall off, right? Like, uh-huh. So there's like a whole lot of room in between what I think is going to happen uh-huh. and what actually is happening. And so it's just like being invited again and again and again to experience what is going on, as opposed to getting caught up in my mind about what I believe is going to happen or what my rehashing what has already happened. And that just happens constantly in life. And mm-hmm. so this is the absolute, like in my experience, the absolute best container to like just drill that over and over and over and over again. There's nothing else to do but sit at the wall and deal with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So how has it affected your life? Like, how has this practice of sitting, facing the wall, doing these practice periods that are really intensive, how do you see this help you arrive and do in your everyday life?
Yeah, that's an interesting thing, too. Like, I haven't practiced this intensely my entire time. It was, you know, light touch early on and some day-longs and retreats and lots of reading about, you know, and Buddhist books and the Dharma, the teachings of the Buddha. And and I think I was also kind of carrying certain ideas about how those things were supposed to enhance my life. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they're supposed to bring me more peace and mm-hmm. calm and, you know, like these ideas, like Buddhists aren't angry people. They're mm-hmm. really, you know... calm, and they say the appropriate things at the appropriate time, and you know, all of that stuff. And so I was aspiring to have more of that in my life, right? Mm-hmm. These are kind of good, wholesome things that one should. And not that that's a bad thing, but I feel like what I've discovered is, you know, part of that is around like again, a projection of, you know, what's supposed to be that's, like, really not in direct alignment with what is. Like, people, as a person, like, anger is something that I have and will encounter and must deal with. And, like, there's no, like, aspiration to get rid of that. Like, how, what is that? How does it even work? And so there's a way in which, like, the practice has helped me to kind of get real about some stuff. And to be able to speak from a place of having, you know, really worked with or wrestled with some of this stuff internally, as opposed to this is what, you know, the scholarship or the Buddhist teachers or the Buddha himself has said about these things, and I can, you know, then articulate them to you. I don't know if that helps to address. So, yeah, I feel like so about probably 6 years ago, I had really thought to want to, I had this observation about myself. I felt like I was living these really separate types of existences. Like, I was one way, and this is just, like, learned adaptation to how to just survive in the world. So I was one way at work, because I, you know, needed to perform in a particular way, and, you know, people would see me in a particular way, and so to make sure that I was respected and that I was seen as competent in my job and all of these things, this is how, this is the work unique. And then there's a way that I'm with my family, right, where I could kind of shed some of that other stuff, but then there's some other stuff that I kind of got to put on a little bit in the role of, you know, daughter and sister and, you know, how you're kind of the relaxed vibe with family and in all of these different arenas in life, and recognize that I was, like, toggling between these things and very exhausted by it. And then also very confused by what was left underneath all of that stuff. What was left underneath all the, like, the layers of things that I was taking on and putting off. And how do I find that? How do I tap into that? How do I live into that? And that is what the practice supports me in doing. And bit by bit, how I've been working to incorporate practice into my life to show up, to just show up as myself. That's it. As simple as that. Very difficult. Simple thing, but very difficult.
Yeah. Really a very difficult and simple thing. So it's like helping you to be able to show up as yourself, as whole, like in your fullness, in all spaces, and not compartmentalize who you are, take off parts, put on parts.
And to know that that central part is okay, like, right? Like, so there was this idea that whatever was underneath all of that stuff in one way or another isn't good, isn't enough, isn't, right? It really learning about, like, no, that's, it is enough. Just starting straight up from there, like, and that's been really, you know, to value myself just as is without myself and all of this improvement plan.
So, like, how have you found the practice as a Black woman to help you work with things like anger and some of those emotions that we get told not to be?
So, I guess in the last year, embarked on the process of, you know, taking what we call bodhisattva vows, just basically like a vow or commitment to align, you know, how you live your life with certain precepts or, you know, guides or invitations that that the Buddha outlines, and it's around kind of like, you know, non-harming for self and others. And part of my instruction for kind of preparing for this, and which it kind of ends out in a big ceremony where your friends and family are invited to kind of see, kind of publicly kind of take this vow. And, you know, part of the preparation for that, My teacher kind of invited me to, like, select an area to work with, mm-hmm. a particular vow to mm-hmm. work with, and one of them is around not harboring ill will. You know, that translates a lot to dealing with anger and being angry and lashing out and inappropriate anger. Mm-hmm. I picked that because I recognized that I had been, that area of anger was, like, up majorly for me. So one thing, I was harboring a lot of anger and resentment. And on the other side, I really was not allowed to by others or allowing myself mm-hmm. to acknowledge or express it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So can you imagine that tinderbox? Mm-hmm. Huge tinderbox. And here I am in this practice where, you know, my ideas about it anyway are that people are like really, everyone is super kind and peaceful and not angry. What in the heck do I do with that? And so, you know, the actual study and the support that I got from my teacher was like, you can't suppress that. You have to work with it. Mm-hmm. Like, as an energy, as a source of energy, work with it. And there are ways where it came out, like, you know, not very skillfully. But it was really interesting to just say, all right, yeah, I am angry. Like, so my life, I'm avoiding the angry black woman stereotype. Mm-hmm. Like, that is the thing I'm ducking and dodging constantly, mm-hmm. right? And I'm just like, all right, well, here it is. I'm just going to let it burn. I'm going to let it burn. And mm-hmm. some stuff had just burnt right up and other things. And I remember telling my teacher, I'm afraid of this. I'm afraid that, huh. like, you know, if I take this lid off, I'm going to burn this entire building down. Mm-hmm. And she's just like, well, here's my hand. I'm extending it to you. And I was like, I'm afraid I'm going to burn you. She's like, well, then just burn it. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? Just burn it. Mm-hmm. Like, I'll burn here with you. And I thought, well, that's interesting. Hmm. That is really interesting. Yeah. It's something to work with. And so, yeah, so I'm not over my anger at all. And I'm able to acknowledge that it exists. And then I'm able to study because I'm allowing it to kind of dance around and do its thing. I'm able to watch it and study. Where does it come from? Mm-hmm. How is it? And then how does it come out? And how am I working with that? And, you know, can I be more skillful or not? How can I bring words and actions and look at the words and actions that are connected to this feeling state. Mm-hmm. And I just don't imagine I'd be able to do that if I'm constantly suppressing it because I think it's something that's, quote, bad.
Right. Yeah. That seems really important to remember that we do have to, like, acknowledge these things and, like, face them and also realize that it's not, like, necessarily something that we own. Like, it doesn't have to just be ours. Like, you said something about our teacher saying that it's an energy that you have to work with and that these are things that are energetic too. They're just out there and sometimes they come to us. Like, sometimes we're experiencing them, but it doesn't necessarily have to just belong to us mm-hmm. or, you know, be inside of us. It's just a thing that exists mm-hmm. and we experience it at times. And how do you work with it or what do you do with it? How do you face it? Yeah, so that seems important to keep in mind. And I also am curious about, so we are guided by the same teacher and a commitment that our teacher has is to help us work with our internalized oppression and racism. And I just want to ask about that. Like, how has that been for you? What have you learned? Or,
well, yeah. So I think that I could just say too that that's one of the reasons how Zenju became my teacher. Like, that's how, like, the fact that what she is in her practice and her Dharma practice is like really wanting to work with black folks mm-hmm. around internalized, what she calls internalized treason. Mm. And it's key for me because, like, I recognize, like, a lot of the stuff that I've got boiling in terms of, like, anger and shame and, like, rage and resentment and stuff is part of, like, this conditioning that's tied to how my embodiment as a Black queer woman, and to have someone straight up addressing that in the spiritual realm and using the Dharma, is, I feel, for me, it's like that's a really supportive pathway for liberation for me. Like, I feel like there's some work in that. And yeah, it's kind of like there's an aspect of it that's around like what's going on externally in the world and other people and what other people are doing and how people are being racist or not, or how structures or systems are racist or not. And then there is, how does that impact me as a person and how I, what I think and believe and how I behave, and those are different, right? And there's some sense of like, I cannot change everyone in the entire world and all of the history, and you know, that there's nothing that I can do to dictate all of those things. There is something that I can do about what's, how my mind is working and how I'm absorbing and or perpetuating those things. And I think that has all the power in the world. And if we're all doing that kind of self-work, some things will shift. But at the very least, I don't know that there's a window opening for me, and that there's some hope and possibility for me in that view. You know what I mean? So that's, yeah, I don't, like, if I addressed your original question.
I kind of want to ask like a general question. I actually have a few general questions, but I'll start with like, what have been some challenges on this path? And then also, what have been some joys of like being on this path?
Challenges. Well, like, so, you know, over the years, it has been challenging being in this Buddhist practice, where, I just, like from the beginning, I kind of always felt that there is something liberating for me in this the Buddhist practice that invites you to test some things out and experience things for yourself. That's really grounded in the ideas of really, like, just not harming others or yourself, and also experiencing, like, trying to work that practice in communities that are predominantly white, predominantly privileged, in certain places in the Zen community, you know, very male dominated, and you know, rubbing up against that. And yeah, early on, I had my first exposure was, like, you know, in a particular lineage in Zen. And I remember kind of finding myself kind of going out and looking in community and just like being, no, I can't be here with him and her and that. I didn't feel invited. And that was a challenging thing. And so, yeah, EBMC, Bay Meditation Center, it's a place in Oakland, and it's a different branch of Buddhism and Vipassana, or, but the community in the center itself was very much one that I felt, like, welcomed, and they have a really explicit, like, mission and vision that's inclusive of, you know, people of color and queer folks and folks with disabilities, and, you know, and they work that out in their structure. And that was like a place where I could, like, that was like my first spiritual home, to be like, okay, I can settle in here and practice a little bit. And not that there were no challenges there, but I think that that was definitely one of the things that was supportive for me. So challenges, and then, yeah, and then, you know, just a real basic, just basic challenge too, is around, like, okay, well, I found it easier to practice, and so that, like, sitting zazen, sitting on the cushion meditation, when I was in a group, in a sangha, like, cause everybody's doing it, okay, I'm gonna go a place, here's the appointed time, sit down, everybody sits and breathes. to do that myself at home, like, that was a big, you know, nobody to tell me exactly what to do, and, like, it just didn't seem, like, beneficial, like, why, okay, like, I'd find any and every excuse in the world to not sit down, and, like, it really helped to illuminate for me how powerful, how big distraction is, like anything that I could figure out to do that was more important than sitting and breathing, I would figure out to do. And it's like, oh yeah, that's probably an indication that I should be doing this thing that's helpful.
Mm-hmm.
So there was challenges and there was
joys. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, you're talking to somebody who doesn't, like... It's like one of my things about, like, trying to find a joyful life. I know it's there. I know it's there. No, but it actually, in finding joy is in the simplest thing. So when I was on retreat last week, I was sharing with a practice leader in discussion, like, that week I discovered the joy of a hot shower. Like, no lie, it was a joyful experience. It's just like... You know, the day is super filled and, you know, the sitting, the zazen posture for me and my body was challenging. It was like a very rigorous thing. And the idea is that you don't move. It's like you sit and you breathe. And I recognized that, like, by day three, there was a way in which I was holding the posture really tough. Like, I was really tensing myself up in some way of striving. And that led to, even more, like, soreness and fatigue than I think I needed to experience. And going into a hot shower in the late afternoon was, like, joy. I mean, and it was, like, a joy that I could actually, in the moment, recognize, like, this is great. And in that recognition, it was so funny. Like, recognizing also that I was going to have to let go of that moment. Like, I had to, like, make the decision, and now the shower will end. Now I have to turn the tap off and actually not try to luxuriate even longer. Like, no, you got a reasonable, you know, 10-minute time in here because other people need to use the shower and you've gone a schedule. Let this go. That's such a learning, because like the thing about, like, the way that we're conditioned often is, like, how do you get to be happy all the time,
right?
And what's gonna make you feel good, and more of that. It's like, no, let's experience that, acknowledge it, and then, like, let it go. So it's like the joy in the simple things and all that,
right?
Like, it's not always, like, you know, the shower doesn't always hit that note, but something in a day-to-day existence hits that note, and it's not the something that I have to kind of go running after.
Right.
But it's the something that I can try to just be open to just by being here.
Right. It's a really great reminder that everything is temporary, that, you know, it's all just in the moment. Like, that joy feels great, but it's going to end. Or that anger is really challenging, but it's going to end. And just about being present.
And it's a big thing for me, too, though, because, like, I've always been one of these people that I'm, like, I'm waiting for the shoe to drop. I'm like, my whole life was, like, around trying to prepare and plan and defend against, like, constant assault, or how something is not going to work, or how, and so it was just not really able to even be, like, to have the, you know, normal, regular, everyday kind of things, joys, open and accessible, like, even as possibilities. It's so trippy. And so a lot of this kind of just getting to the simple things around, like, what do we do as human beings to, you know, move and eat and take care of ourselves, like, and finding simplicity and joy in that.
So I'm thinking about, this is kind of going in another direction, but I'm thinking about, like, I grew up going to a Christian church and had a really complicated experience of that, and then was introduced to Buddhism, like, you know, in my 30s, and also had a complicated experience with that. But the thing that about it that drew me and kind of has kept me is that it's about me. Like, it's about, you know, my internal experience and sitting with myself. And it's not, you know, there are still teachings, there are books, there are texts, just like there's a Bible and books and teachings and stuff. But it's really more about how I show up and how I react to things. And I'm curious about your experience with religion and how, I mean, if this is something that you've, how long you've been doing this, if this is counter to another practice, or how, if it's different from anything that you knew before, and how you've stayed with it, or why you stayed with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I was raised Christian, attended Baptist church when I was younger, and I didn't discover Buddhism until my mid-20s, and I remember when I was younger, I loved church. Loved church because I love to study. Like, I've always been like the big questions. Well, why are we here? Mm-hmm. What are we doing? Like, mm-hmm. How do we get to that? Like, and so I was always very curious and loved Sunday school. I was one of those kids that just loved Sunday school. Mm-hmm. And I was the one that was like, you know, are we going to church today? Are we going to church today? And then I got to an age where I still wasn't asking questions. Mm-hmm. I want to know more. Well, I don't, you know, how I understood that lesson doesn't seem like it fit with the other lesson that mm-hmm. I got. Can you help me to, and that was like really frowned upon. And, you know, I got shut down in a number of times, and that was difficult for me to process. Like, okay, well, what's in this that's, you know, not wholesome enough that we can just let it all out? That mm-hmm. was kind of like what I would carry.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got kind of into my teen years, and I got really, I was really challenged by the contrast or the discrepancy between like what I experienced in the church and what was going on in my community and in family realms and personal realms. And I wasn't getting a sense that it was like it was addressing the concerns of my life. Like there were things that, you know, you didn't talk about and you couldn't talk about. And, you know, this, you know, doesn't address that. And so it just felt like, for me, more about performance and pageantry. And then, you know, started thinking about the history of stuff. And I was just kind of over it. I got really cynical and I thought, well, all these spiritual paths are really about people doing what they're told, and about some kind of distraction away from dealing with what's happening in the real world and really actually helping people. It's some kind of, you know, and I don't want any part of it. And I stopped going to church, and I stopped really just being, you know, kind of had a pretty negative view of religious practice for some time. And it left a hole. Left a big hole. Mm-hmm. And I didn't recognize that. It's just like, it's just like, well, I guess this is just how it is. And yeah, it wasn't until many years later that I was able to kind of get open to some idea of faith and the opportunity to kind of step into a practice of spiritual practice where I'm invited to hear something. Hear the, you know, a teaching or experience, and then to try it on to see, does it make sense to me? Does it work out for me? How can I experience this for myself?
Mm-hmm.
And in order to, you know, adapt it, that really aligned well for me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for me, the practice, it's my own personal practice, and that it's also for me like a way to be in community. And so a community to practice with is really important, and that may take some time for someone to find. It took me some time. I've had different places where I've been, but I'm very, very happy with the practice community that I have now. A place where Black folks sitting and breathing together. I don't know. I feel like I don't know if I'm the best guide at like what to do or anything. Just, yeah.
That's good advice. Yeah, thank you. And I'm really happy with the practice community that I'm a part of. It's how I know Unique, and I'm really grateful that we were able to have this conversation. Thank you for being here. And
thanks for having me.
Thank you for being honest and just willing to share with more community about your experience. So we'll wrap it up. You guys know where to follow us on Instagram and Facebook, Dismantled Diaspora. You can also email us at dismantlethis2@gmail.com. Let us know what you thought about this conversation. You know, give us some feedback. We always appreciate hearing from you guys, and let us know what else you guys want to hear. What other kinds of dialogues or interviews should we do? What are you guys interested in? So thank you for listening. There aren't four people here, so we won't end with our four words. We'll just say thank you for listening and bye. Bye.